I'm always excited for the Big East tournament, even when Rutgers isn't in it, which they are this year. But like in the past, when they used to cut teams out of it, I always got excited for the Big East tournament. So yeah, I'm excited.
I always thought that was a better system, by the way. You know, I like not having teams have to make their way to the tournament. It shouldn't be everybody gets in and then people have to watch Rutgers versus, who are they playing, DePaul tomorrow?
DePaul.
Rutgers, DePaul, and Seton Hall. What's the other crappy team? South Florida?
Well, see, I like watching those games because usually Rutgers is in one of those games.
It's Monday, March 11th. This is the ninth episode of Not Half Bad, your podcast covering St. John's and Rutgers hoops. I am Norman with Rumble in the Garden. You can find me at RumbleSBN on Twitter, or you can find me on Ecoast Bias on Twitter.
And I'm Dave from On the Banks, and you can find me at Dave_White on Twitter. On the Banks is the Rutgers blog, if that wasn't clear.
That is clear to me now. You know, these last days of the Big East tournament, and no matter what anybody says, and no matter what the formerly ESPN-dubbed Catholic Seven do with the tournament, it's the end of an era. You know, you've got this Big East tournament that will now no longer have Rutgers. It won't have Syracuse. It won't have Pittsburgh. It's not the same.
No, it's not. You're a little punchy tonight, aren't you?
Am I?
You're a little punchy.
Punchy? How am I punchy? I haven't punched anything.
You haven't.
Oops. There we go.
I expect a stream of punch puns tonight.
Nice. So yeah, this is the, in a sense, an end of an era. And a lot of people have written about it, have eulogized it, have thought about their favorite memories. What's your favorite memory from the Big East tournament?
Oh, man. Well, I can go Rutgers' favorite memory, which has got to be Jeff Billett beating Georgetown at the buzzer my freshman year in the second round to send them to the only time they ever played Friday night in the Big East tournament. That's got to be the best Rutgers memory. But that six overtime game, I remember watching that and just wondering if I was ever getting to sleep and just how exciting that game was for, well, five of the overtimes. The sixth overtime wasn't great, but
I kind of remember it being the same as well. I remember it being just sort of like a game that took forever, and it had so much Eric Devendorf that I can't think of that as a great game, you know, because, you know, Eric Devendorf.
Yeah, when was that? Was that 09 or 2010?
It's looking like six overtimes was in 2009.
2009. Oh, so that was okay. That was the year as okay. That was when what's his name? The one and done guy at Cincinnati beat Rutgers at the buzzer.
Oh, Lance Stevenson, yeah.
Yeah, that was a great game. Rutgers was in some great games. The Seton Hall game from 2010 in overtime, and then the next day where there's still a second left.
Oh, gosh. What happened in that game?
St. John's had, you know, possession, stepped out of bounds, and then the refs decided it was happy hour.
Oh, I thought that the game just, you know, they just, it was one of those 39-minute and 40, you know, 51, 52-second games, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That happens once. I wish that happened this year because Rutgers would be like 10-8 instead of 4-14.
Yeah.
Or 5-13, whatever they are.
So here's a favorite memory for me.
I was just about to ask. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No. Okay. I think two favorite memories are the 98-99 St. John's team going all the way to the finals, I believe, with LeVar Postel and crew. But then they lost to Connecticut. And that you always hate to see that happen, you know, losing to Connecticut or playing Connecticut. And along the way, apparently, they beat Rutgers, which I do not remember at all.
That was the Billett year.
Oh, that was the Billett year?
Yeah. Oh. Wait, 98-99. Hold on. I'm trying to think that. No, 98-99, that was the following year when Rutgers was the last team out of the NCAA because they lost to St. John's.
In 98, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I got my years confused.
And actually, I do remember that 98-99 and actually feeling a little bad for Rutgers because it was pretty clear that, you know, they were so cute and plucky and, you know, they were kind of good. And I remember that they were on the Selection Sunday show, right?
Yeah.
Because I think I remember their sad faces, you know, shown right at the end, this like crushed look of, you know, Rutgers dumb, you know, Rutgers being Rutgers. Nobody wants to see
You're breaking
that.
Out all the cliches tonight.
That's not a cliche. It's just Rutgers being Rutgers.
I'm waiting for same old Rutgers. I'm waiting for you to pull that one out, too. That's S-O-R? A favorite. It's, or it's what's a Rutgers?
What's a Rutgers?
What's a Rutgers?
What's a... All right. But the next year, the 99-2000 year, St. John's did get to cut down the nets and beat Connecticut along the way. And there's nothing more heartwarming than beating Connecticut. You know, it's like it's like saying that everything is right with the world. It's like the sun shining on a cloudy day. It's like the opposite of all the things that happened in the Alanis Morissette's Ironic.
Because nothing was ironic in that song, just crappy. No,
they all just sucked. But it's like the opposite of that, you know? Right. It's like it's sunshine. And even that was bittersweet, though, because that team, I think around that time, that's when the stuff came out about Eric Barkley and, you know, possibly him driving around in a vehicle that wasn't his. Mm. Not because
that,
he stole it.
Was Jarvis or Fraschilla?
That was Jarvis, yeah. Okay. And it was not because he stole it, but because somebody had just, acquired it for him and with favorable terms that are, you know, as a student athlete, constitutes a certain amount of perhaps influence or something like that. And then they lost to Northern Arizona.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. That eight. No, actually, no, I'm wrong. I'm wrong about that. I'm sorry. And then they lost to Gonzaga.
That's not as bad as losing to Northern Arizona.
They struggled with Northern Arizona. That game was sad. It was like it was a 61-56 win, and I remember watching Dan McClintock or whatever his name was and going, seriously? They were a 15 seed. It was disgusting.
Well, you know, at least your depressing memories are, you know, NCAA tournament depressing memories.
That's true. You know, you make me feel better about myself.
Yeah,
thank
I
you
was
for
in
that.
Middle school when Rutgers last went to the NCAAs. So,
oh man, were schools when Rutgers went to the NCAAs? I did not know that.
Yeah, 91 was the last year.
Oh wow, that's not that far.
No, not at all. I was in middle school.
All right, so oh man, Gonzaga. I'm looking at that box score now. I'm looking at Matt Santangelo's 26 points back in the Casey Calvary days and Richie Fromm and all those guys who started the Gonzaga that we know and love today.
Was that the last time Gonzaga won an NCAA tournament game?
No, they've won since. They've won. They certainly went to the Sweet 16 in like 05 or 06, but then they kept keep losing around the Sweet 16 or Elite 8. You know, they never get over the hump.
Mm. Okay. So, but yeah, so the Big East tournament's coming up. It's the quote unquote last one.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last big one, but some things have gone on previous to the Big East tournament amongst both Rutgers and St. John's. So it seems like more has gone on the St. John's end. So why don't you update us, Harrison?
All right.
Some fights, you know, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, all the good stuff. I guess since I forget where we were the last time the podcast came out. Was it before the Providence game? I can't remember.
It was, we did the addendum where we talked about Orlando Sanchez getting his waiver. So Harrison hadn't been suspended yet. We talked about Harrison.
Yeah, we talked about Harrison right before he gotten suspended. So D'Angelo Harrison, who had, you know, kind of stunk for much of the month of February, got suspended for some conduct detrimental to the team is probably a much cleaner way of saying what happened. Basically, Steve Lavin told him that he should just, you know, get away from basketball for a little bit, get his mind right, and learn how to be a better teammate. Also, you know, the Johnnies still had games to play, so they played Providence without him, had a close loss. They played Notre Dame without him and had what was a solidly competitive game for the first half, and then one of the worst halves they've played all year in the second.
Oh, yeah, now I remember game. That was terrible.
They got scored 44-14 in the second half. Basically, they stunk like a middle school team against a college team. And Notre Dame just had their way with them. They went ham on them, if you will. And, you know, the Notre Dame guys, Yeah, they just went off. And, you know, there are reasons. I think really Notre Dame just had it in their head that Chris Obekwa was going to be around. And when they just realized that they should just start playing and start dunking the ball, they were really good. You know, in the first half, honestly, they missed a lot of bunnies. They missed shots that, I don't know, you could probably make. You know, I couldn't because I'm really bad at basketball. But they made shots that any relatively tall person standing right by the basket could make, and they missed them. So they opened it up on them. And at the end of the game, so Dominic Poynter, who had been feeling a little, you know, maybe a little punchy himself, got a little punchy. And, you know, went off on Cam Beachside at the end of the game with about a minute 46. He got ejected. It was suspended for a game.
Did they ever explain what set him off? Was it just trash talking or frustration? I mean, I was at Rutgers Marquette that night, so I was just kind of following on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was a combination of both. His dad and his family was in the crowd, and, you know, he'd been a little chippy. He'd kind of smacked the back of Tom Knight's head earlier, I think a possession or two earlier even. And, you know, he often talks during games or is just like, you know, come on, ref, and arguing with the refs and such. You know, very kind of NBA-style, you know, chatter.
He certainly is knightly. Jeez.
He did add a little bit of knighting to Tom Knight's head. and then he gave the full sword to Cam Beachside. I think it was just frustration. And to be honest, if you watch the game replay and not just the highlight, you'll see that at the free throw line right before that, you see Cam Beachside, he's, you know, sort of like tapping him, you know, the way that players will try to muscle each other a little bit before a free throw goes up. But he's obviously saying something, you know, and kind of like smiling or snickering. And, you know, at the end of a blowout like that, I don't know that you need to be, you know, talking trash. You should be comporting yourself with some sort of composure, you know? And mm-hmm. At the other end, you know, Beachside is, you know, they're coming to a pause, and, you know, Mike Bray's going to take Jack Cooley out, and Beachside just reaches up and kind of like, you know, taps him on the cheek. I don't know why he did that. I don't know what the purpose was, but it wasn't unintentional. It was very obviously, I'm going to reach out and touch you. And, you know, Poynter said, you know, F this, and went off on him. So, you know, I don't approve of it, but, you know, as I've said to other people, you know, I kind of understand.
Yeah.
I think that Beachside, you know, has to be noted for making kind of a punk move. But, you know, Poynter also made a punk move, and I don't think he should have fought. You know, it's not good for the team, and it's not good for his image, and it's not good for the school's image. You know, this is a school that has, you know, possible issues with quote-unquote culture, both with the kind of players that Lavin has brought in and their history of just having like a quote-unquote urban, you know, team in a sport that's often, you know, thought of as a little bit, you know, quote-unquote urban. And you know what I mean by coded, you know, it's coded language here when I say urban. You know, it's sort [S2] Right. [S1] Of like you have these young black kids who, you know, occasionally woof and, you know, dunk and show out. And people, a lot of fans don't necessarily respond well to that still to this day. And that's sad to say. So a lot of people do. A lot of, you know, maybe younger people do. I don't know. But it's not like in hockey where you can, you know, flex and woof and beat the crap out of each other. And people don't seem to mind it in the same way. So it's something that it's something that they have to be cognizant of and they'll have to deal with in the future.
Yeah, I mean, what Poynter did, that's just a sign of immaturity and, you know.
And it happens, you know. It
does. It does. It does. It's just, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes you just got to take it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. and look forward to the next one.
You know, I will add, along with that, and then I'll talk about the final game. I will add that watching it on replay, and I thought this too when I was there and in South Bend watching it live. I did think that, not that his teammates gave up, and I don't know that there's any problem that Poynter has with his teammates, but I do think that Poynter was giving a different level of effort than the rest of them were. I think guys were trying, but they were trying in a way that wasn't necessarily productive. You know, it's like, I can say that I'm trying and just hoist shots from half court, you know? I'm still trying. I want to make those shots. But, you know, Pointers was doing a lot of things. He was directing traffic. He's trying to play good defense. He's trying to funnel guys here and there. And, you know, there are a couple of teammates that got burnt a lot. And I could see getting frustrated about that.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I'm sure it's a bunch of things. But, you know, when he's a senior, and if they get blown out like that, he won't be that won't be happening.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only point I'm trying to make is it's there seems to be a lot of signs of immaturity in terms of attitude mm-hmm. on St. John's and with Harrison getting suspended mm-hmm. and Pointer getting in the fight.
Yeah. And you know, I don't a few people have made the point that I think you'd rather see this than to see a guy who's just sort of like yucking it up on the sidelines as his team gets blown out.
Yeah, I mean, the yucking it up never bothered me that much as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, this is what these guys have been doing for, you know, most of their lives, playing basketball, and I'm sure they've been blown out before.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to deal with it in your own way.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand why fans are coming to Pointer's side saying, hey, he was playing hard and hey, he got pushed too far. But I don't know. It doesn't look good in terms of on Lavin, to be honest.
No, it doesn't.
More than Pointer when you have two, you know, in the span of a week and a half, suspending a kid for immaturity and then having to suspend a kid because he gets into a fight that he should not have gotten into.
Mm-hmm. This is true.
So, I mean, that's what would worry me more as a St. John's fan, not so much the fighting, but we've talked, I think, in previous episodes about Lavin recruiting, you know, some higher-ranked players that are more risks, and I think it kind of bit him, you know, towards the end of this year.
I'm not going to pin that on Lavin's recruiting. I do think that, you know, he has to figure out how to manage them better and how to get them to manage their energies better. And to be fair, you know, I don't think you can't really characterize, at least from what I've seen, I've certainly seen a lot of St. John's fans who are very anti what Pointer did and they're almost ready to jump off the boat.
But yeah, I mean, I understand where it comes from, but it was just, you know, what surprised me is how St. John's as a team rebounded from that against Marquette.
It was lovely. It was quite a tough battle that St. John's gave Marquette, the overtime loss in the Garden on Saturday. It went down to, actually, the funniest thing about the game is that it not only did it go down to that last second Vanderblue layup in overtime for Marquette to win their share of the Big East Championship, it also came down to, you know, Marquette being up something like 10 points with about 2 minutes to go, and St. John's making up that deficit with
I think it was 7 when I had it on. That might have been a minute and a half, mm-hmm. though.
It was something like a 12-2 or 13-2 run at the end of that game. You know, the team just making the right shots, Marquette making a dumb turnover, not hitting their free throws. All those little things that will come and bite you, and they all bit Marquette.
Well, they caught it from Rutgers, playing Rutgers earlier in the week. Clearly,
I knew that
Dane
Rutgers
Miller or somebody sneezed on Junior Cadugan, and that whole had to cough up a lead thing ended up on Marquette.
I think you guys are diseased. No, I won't make
it. I'm just going to have to sit here and take it, too, the way
this I'm not going to make an STD capital of the country joke. No, I will not. but know that that's there. there were a number of times during the game you could kind of see St. John's Twitter just go, oh, here we go again, and just really want to just say, no, I'm not watching this game anymore. And St. John's just kept fighting back, even though they didn't really have a lot of offensive weapons. You know, they let Marco Borgeau loose, or Marc-Antoine Borgeau loose, and Marc-Antoine went something like 1-for-12 from outside the arc. That wasn't good.
No.
But, you know, the guy's gotten no run in the last month, so yeah, he probably got a little trigger happy.
Yeah. But Branch really seemed to take over. I didn't even know he was back.
Yeah.
But he took over that last 2 minutes.
He was good. And the previous two games, he'd looked a little tentative. He played 3 minutes at Providence, and he played a bunch of minutes against Notre Dame, but he sat for a chunk of the second half, which, you know, may have been a factor in that second half blowout against Marquette. He played 33 minutes, had 8 assists, 5 rebounds, and only 4 points, which surprised me because it seemed like he was in a lot of places at once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was impressive. It was a fun game to watch.
And Phil Green came out with probably his crispest performance of the season this side of the Baylor game. He scored 20 on a 9 of 13 shooting. He had the runner going. He was getting to the rim. He really looked kind of good.
I only saw the last 2 minutes and the overtime, so mm-hmm. I couldn't comment too much on that. But it was very entertaining to watch.
It was the kind of game that reminds you how good it can be to be good in the Garden. You know, you have this crowd that for some reason just gets up for everything when, you know, the team is making a run. You know, it feels like a pro game. It has that big, like, you know, a bunch of guys at the sideline going, come on, you can score on them, you know, kind of ambiance, you know, just like really like rabble rousing, you know, mm-hmm. up on your feet, you know, just it's really exciting.
Yeah, it was exciting to watch. It was loud. It sounded loud on TV. So.
Mm-hmm. Heard it was a good crowd.
It looked like it. And Pointer was jumping up and down.
Yeah, he was pretty excited. And
he was swinging his arms.
just looking for something. No.
No, he wasn't.
Stop. No, I do like Pointer's game, and I'm interested in seeing how they integrate him into the attack against Villanova on Wednesday.
Yeah. Because
he's an interesting player. He's not necessarily much of a scorer, but he's pretty good at, it seems, at understanding the game, at passing.
He does it all.
Yeah, and he can score a little bit. They need to find ways of getting him to score more. So on the other side, tell me what's up with Rutgers and this Mike Rice fellow. Is he coming back?
He's coming back. They announced it today. Pernetti actually talked to the Star Ledger, the local New Jersey paper, basically to say, you know, there was never a question in his mind that he sees improvement everywhere except in the wins and losses, and that Rice will be back next year. Basically, I got the sense that Permanetti didn't even expect to have to say anything, but some teams were using it against Rice on the recruiting trail, saying, oh, he's not going to be here next year. Why would you go to Rutgers? You know, that sort of thing, the suspension. And Permanetti basically had to step up and say, no, he's coming back and he's really improved. And it's like night and day. You know, he's really learned so much this year. To kind of keep Rutgers in the recruiting game. Thereafter, we talked about John Sevier a couple weeks ago. They're really putting the full court press on for this kid, a guard, a shooter. And it's the kind of player they need. So I think that's why they let it out that he's come back before even the Big East tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll be back. Since we've been gone, Rutgers played Marquette at the Rack on senior night. And really hung in there again for 35 minutes. They led by 12, you know, decently into the second half. Mm-hmm. Looked like the way they were playing, it looked like tonight's going to be the different night. You know, it had that feeling in the stands because Marquette never went on a big run. They just kind of chipped away and got back in it and won it in the final, I got to say, minute. Dane Miller missed 2 free throws to tie the game. And that kind of sealed it. And it was very interesting after that because it seemed like Rutgers had run out of gas, that they put everything they had into it. I don't know if you watched the Mike Rice press conference after that. It was kind of everywhere. But he was actually fighting back tears during the press conference for how bad he wanted that game for his team and how hard the team had worked. Wow. You know, it was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I've sat around a lot of losing as a Rutgers fan, and I don't think I've ever seen the coach react that way.
Yeah.
And it was almost one of those things like, okay, Mike, take that press conference, take that on the recruiting trail and show them how bad you want to win and how bad, you know, you need a player like that kind of thing. And then they came out, they played Seton Hall at Seton Hall, and Seton Hall, it looks like my prediction of them being a mess is starting to come true. And Rutgers beat them by 5 on the road, swept Seton Hall for the first time since I was a senior at Rutgers 2000 and 2001.
Applause.
That's where we stand. Exactly. All right. Sweeping Seton Hall, finishing ahead of them for the first time since 2001, 2002.
Wow. So Rutgers is 3-1 against the New York area teams this year.
3-1 against the New York area teams, yeah.
And then 1-4 whatever the rest is against everybody. No, wait, they beat South Florida too.
Yeah, 2 and...
It's what, 18-game season, so
2-12.
Nicely done. Nicely done, Rutgers.
2-12 against everybody else. But you know what? It was nice to get a win. It was really actually cool after the watching the press conference of Rice, you know, kind of crying and talking about the team and how down they were. It was kind of cool seeing him, like, laughing on the sidelines and shaking everybody's hand and, you know, kind of letting the team know how much fun it is to win again and just being excited for them that they got it done. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that's where we stand. He's coming back next year, which... You know, I don't know how I feel about it. I'd like to see how he recruits and if anybody transfers. Mm-hmm. But he's coming back. And that's where we stand as a Rutgers team.
You know, I thought I did watch a chunk of that Rutgers Seton Hall game. And I made my wife watch, too. I think it made her want to go to sleep.
I was going to point this out. At one point, though, you did say on Twitter that Rutgers offense looked dynamic.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, I think it was the softness of Seton Hall's defense, because I do spend a lot of time just kind of laying back into the paint. But yeah, at times, you know, Rutgers looked like they were moving the ball. They looked like they had threats. They were getting the ball inside to Wally Judge. I didn't know what on earth was going on.
They have those stretches every game where you're like, all right, this team's turning around, and then just goes away.
Yep.
They don't adjust, and Seton Hall didn't make any adjustments, which is why Rutgers won.
I also thought it was interesting that, and, you know, look, I try not to slag on players too much, but, you know, it looked like yet another one of those Dane Miller performances where you're like, why are you here? What are you doing? And, you know, you're not really quite sure. He's not being particularly good or crisp on defense. He's not being much of anything on offense, despite being very quick. And it's great to see guys like, you know, Mike Poole get the chance to... Didn't he score his 4 points all in the last 2 minutes? That one jumper that he stepped into that was pretty much the clincher.
Yeah, he had that. He scored twice, I guess, down the stretch. And he had the steal off Kone's miss free throw that would ice the game, where he passed it off to Miller.
Yeah.
And Miller got fouled.
Yeah, that was nice, man. That was... You know, I was yelling Rosedale on the map, you know, for my...
I know you're a huge Mike Poole fan.
My Rosedale people, you know. So I'm glad he could get another big moment. And is he back next year?
He's back. He's a senior next year.
Okay, good. So it's good to see him get out there and just be a good glue guy. You know, he's always been a guy where you're never quite sure how he fits on a major conference roster, because he doesn't, you know, he's not a big scorer. He's not super quick, but he's a kind of a smart, tough player, you know, who doesn't back down. He's got a good spirit to him.
Yeah, he's got less athletic, but a little of that, the way you described Sir Dominic. Mm-hmm. Kind of. He can hit the elbow jumper from the free throw line. He plays some tough defense. He kind of fouls a lot and turns it over, but, you know, he's a smart player, and he wants to be out there. He wants to be the one shooting the big shot. Mm-hmm. What do you got in the Big East tournament? What do you got coming up?
St. John's has Villanova next. Ryan Arcidiacono, Javon Pinkston, and crew. And it's going to be an interesting matchup, just thinking about how that first game was such a back and forth Arcidiacono versus Harrison just shooting fest, you know. Ryan Arcidiacono scored 32 in that game, and D'Angelo Harrison scored 36. And you can't imagine St. John's pulling it out without every one of those points. The Johnnies have certainly grown somewhat since then, and they should have other scorers, but it's hard to say, you know, what that's going to look like against a Villanova team that's also improved a lot and has played a lot of good ball down the stretch.
Let's say they win. Who do they have next?
Oh, man, I didn't look that far ahead.
That should be an interesting game, though. Villanova's really coming on.
Yeah.
And Poynter will be back. It's at the Garden, so there'll be a lot of – it's the 7 o'clock game, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, so there'll be a lot of fans there. It'll be a pro St. John kind of crowd.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I would say necessarily that it's going to be a huge St. John's crowd. One of the best things about the Big East tournament is that it draws so many people from so many different places that, you know, even St. John's home games sometimes don't sound like home games.
Yeah, that's true. But it does have the potential to be the best game on Wednesday.
Yeah, I'd agree, because I think that Cincinnati-Providence game has the potential of being a sparsely attended turd show of bad shots and just sneering dudes, you know? Yeah, the St. John's Villanova game could also be quite sloppy. I think both teams have done... The thing with both teams is that they've both played very good defense over the course of the season, especially inside the arc. So, you know, it really depends on what they choose to do, on whether they choose to bomb from outside or go inside. It could be a rock fight.
Yeah, it could be, which I enjoy those kinds of games. So
yeah, a good 7 p.m. rock fight before Notre Dame takes on, what, do they get the winner of DePaul and Rutgers?
Yeah, they get the winner of DePaul and Rutgers.
Well, all right, I'd like to say up top for our teams getting night games and not the 12 and 2s.
Yes, exactly. Rutgers plays DePaul, the 9:30 game on Tuesday, following the crisp basketball game that should be Seton Hall USF.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and Rutgers has lost to DePaul already this year. It was the game Eli Carter went down.
Ouch.
Yeah, so I hope the team uses that as motivation, and I hope they come in and play loose, because DePaul is certainly beatable.
The way DePaul plays defense...
I don't know... What?
I said the way DePaul plays defense, if your team cannot beat DePaul... It's time to really start rethinking whether somebody should come back. Oh, that's not true. DePaul probably has a run in them, too.
Yes, everybody has a 19-0 run against Rutgers. I think DePaul is a worse matchup for Rutgers than USF is. I was kind of hoping to play USF because I want to play those other teams that can't score.
Yeah, I mean, USF is just terrible.
They're awful this year. And it's too bad because I really like Anthony Collins. But... So, I mean, you got to contain Melvin and Brandon Young if you're Rutgers, and you got to, if you're Rutgers, you have to control the tempo. You can't let DePaul control the tempo because then you're screwed.
Yeah, because I don't know that Rutgers really has enough pop to run with DePaul the way that they want to run, you know, just getting up and down and throwing down dunks. And the way that Rutgers is so sloppy with the ball, you know, you're getting into that kind of track meet is Achilles heel.
Yeah, Rutgers needs to keep this game in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
They can't win. They wouldn't win 85-82 unless it's like a triple overtime game.
Mm-hmm. Keep it in the 60s. Incense and peppermints, guys.
Yes, exactly. but that's it. And then they have Notre Dame. I have looked at Rutgers' path. Mm-hmm. And they have three teams that they have played well against. They lost all three. Mm-hmm. But they have DePaul. They have Notre Dame, which came down on the road to... a final play, mm-hmm. and they have Marquette, which came down to the final 2 minutes. So while I don't expect Rutgers to get to Saturday night, or even Friday night for that matter, there is potential. It's not like, oh, even if we play DePaul, we have to face Syracuse, who's just a terrible, awful matchup for us, even if they were for full strength. Mm-hmm. So there's some interesting matchups. And I think if Rutgers could win against DePaul and then put up a good showing against Notre Dame, it's something to give the fans a little bit of optimism going into next year.
You know, you just depressed me because I'm looking at this path and I think, you know, Rutgers really, they could make the semifinals.
They're not making, stop it.
I know it's not really going to happen. I know that Marquette is going to scout them well and then beat the living tar out of them. But you know, Notre Dame and Marquette, those are two teams that can give it up, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But you got to beat DePaul first. DePaul, you can't look past.
That's true. On St. John's side, they've got Villanova first. Nova has a decent amount of depth and a lot of size, and they can both run and slow things down if they need to against St. John's. To me, it just doesn't seem like that great of a matchup. You know, I think Arcidi Akino is good at controlling the ball, and I do think that St. John's will need to be able to score to knock off Villanova. You know, they're not the kind of team that is beating themselves exactly. You know, even though they have a high turnover rate, they feel like, it feels like that's just part of their style. You know, they're just like, yeah, we'll give you the ball and then we'll take it back, and then we'll give you the ball and we'll take it back. And you get into these sort of muddy, messy, back and forth games where all of a sudden there's Arcidi Akino, you know, free for a three, or there's James Bell, you know, making the crucial steal, you know, things like that. So I don't know. I don't think that feels like an iffy matchup. I think Providence or Cincinnati would probably be a better matchup for St. John's, but that's just in my head. I don't know that anything's a good matchup when you've lost 6 of your last 8 or 6 of your last 9, you know? You know, at a certain point, all matchups get a little dicey because you see all the flaws in your team. If St. John's should get past Villanova, I believe they have Louisville next, and that's just not good at all. Louisville is deep. Louisville is fast. And I think that I think Rick Pitino will have Louisville ready to just open it up, turn it on, and run their way towards the NCAA's Final Four. I don't like that at all. I'd rather have, I mean, Pittsburgh is beatable. I don't think Georgetown, Pittsburgh is beatable.
Yeah.
But, you know, Georgetown and Louisville and Syracuse would be probably the 3 teams that I would say that St. John's, you know, you'd rather they didn't face. And even right. Syracuse, you know, there's parts of their second half where they just stopped paying attention and they were just sloppy. But Georgetown and Louisville, those 2 teams are on a mission, and that mission would just knock around St. John's.
It's the Big East tournament. Everybody gets fired up. And you know what's cool? I was thinking about this today. What's cool about the Big East tournament is that every team has had a moment in the Big East tournament.
This is true.
Even DePaul, the year they went 0-16, came out that first night and beat somebody.
That's a sad moment to have.
It is sad, but I mean, everybody has a moment, like something unbelievable has happened. You know, South Florida beat Villanova 3 years ago, you know, like that kind of got them a little, woke them up a little bit. Everybody has a moment.
Yeah.
It's the fun part. I mean, I'm really looking forward to this week. Who do you got winning it?
Louisville.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go Georgetown. I have no confidence in Siva and Smith in a close game.
I see that, but I do feel like they could just get to a point where they don't play that many close games. And Russ Smith can hit his free throws. It's just when you have him in a, you know, with like 2-3 minutes left to go in a big game, then things get a little weird and dicey. You know, he starts just taking over on his own. And maybe Rick Pitino can finally get through to him and say, don't do that. You know, maybe Russ Smith has gotten all of that out of him before the tournament. Remember that Rick Pitino is a very good coach. And I feel like there's a lot of the madness that happens around Louisville's teams. His teams often have these years where they're supposed to be dominant, but all of a sudden, you know, some walk-on is playing, or, you know, they lose a couple of games to just teams you've never heard of, or they lose to St. John's. And it doesn't mean that they're bad. It just means that Pitino's experimenting. He's testing things out. And then he opens it up on you.
They have those Lavin losses.
Yeah. He has a Lavin loss. It's just what he does, you know? I'm looking at, like, the 2 Final Four years from 2008 and 2009. You know, there were games there where you're just like, you know, losing to Western Kentucky one year. You're losing to Dayton and Purdue another year, you know? And these are years that they went far.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, and that's part of figuring it out, I guess. Like you said, experimenting. Let's see if this works. So this was another episode. The 9th, did you say?
The 9th.
The 9th episode of Not Half Bad. And I put in my headphones from when Rutgers actually was not half bad to use tonight. So we'll see what happens with that. And I'm Dave from On the Banks. You can find me at Twitter at @Dave_White.
This is Norman from Rumble in the Garden. I don't have good luck headphones. I use the same ones every week, and, you know, different things happen. But this is Norman of Rumble in the Garden, and you can find me at ECOASTBIAS. That's ECOASTBIAS. Or you can find the Rumble's full feed at Rumble SBN with the contributions from the other writers, Quinn and Tim and Jaden.
Yeah, I'm the only one hanging out on... Well, there's BK Observer who's covering some football stuff.